And we're back on the air at, man, we were asleep at the switch there. Beryl Wiseman's in studio, and the last angry man, he takes over at 7 o'clock. I would take that you're going to be talking about Lucien Bouchard's latest outage today in the Journal de Montréal. I would remind you that this is just a one-year reprise the Clear-Eyed Manifesto.
No question, but we're going to...
And I agree with him 100%.
We're going to take the show... it's not a matter of laziness. We're going to take the show in a little bit of a different direction. We have a special guest in studio, Germaine Belzile, who's an instructor at the Institute of Applied Economics, University of Montréal. We were going to talk about the fact that, and we are still, that he organized 20 Quebec intellectuals on that letter in the press last week that said, you know, it's time for us to take a clear stand on radical Islam. But it's interesting that he's here today because, as an economist, we're going to have a little bit of a talk on that because it's not just that Quebecers are lazy, Jim.
It's not lazy.
It's not lazy. No, it's not. But 940 has been saying lazy all day.
They're wrong.
Because what he did say, you got it right earlier.
What he did say is that governments are so eager to pander to individuals that they'll flush money into their systems. This entitlement.
Absolutely,
society.
But
all right. But listen, before you go there, I want to talk to you about this. French police today detained a guy for allegedly sending a threatening email to Robert Redeker.
Well, I don't know if that's the one, but remember, Redeker is under police protection because of a fatwa.
They got to him anyway. This 25-year-old Muslim male taken into custody near Paris claims he acted alone. Even though Redeker had been in hiding since he published the article, this guy managed to get to him via email, under police protection. Email threats included photos of Redeker, a map of his home, and his telephone numbers.
Well, Jim, you know that we've looked at this problem on this program. Europe's got a major issues with this. We've talked to Professor Alain Finkielkraut from Paris. The French have their issues. They went through their riots. The Dutch with the cartoon jihad. But I don't know if you caught the story this week in Britain. A British Airways employee is taking British Airways to task because she wasn't allowed to wear a small little cross that was visible. Yet, because British Airways says, well, we don't allow jewelry. Yet British Airways, who insist on a one policy for their uniforms, do allow hijabs. Do allow Sikhs to wear headgear. So it's like a reverse discrimination already. We're bending over backwards in insanity.
Yes. And your point?
My point is that it's spreading here, and I think that's what our special guest point is, too. And we have to watch out about it.
Well, you allow everything or you allow nothing.
You allow it, exactly, but that's the
one
point.
One or the other.
You can't allow the state to dictate freedom. Freedoms are indivisible. You can't say it's okay for one group and not okay for another group. Or you go to the French Modèle Républicain that Sarkozy's law has tried to enact and say in public places, no display of religiosity at all.
I love it.
The secular faith.
I love it. I love the ideal. The ideal of an absolutely secular society. It's absolutely untenable.
Well, let's explain.
It's absolutely.
Well, yeah. Let's explain to the listeners what that means. It doesn't mean religion is illegal. It means that in public places there shall be no
public trappings of religiosity.
Exactly.
Crosses, hijab,
headgear of any kind, be they Jewish or Muslim,
kirpan on Sikh students.
Right.
Well,
nothing.
There it is. And yet we are constantly redefining our society about what we do.
Yeah, but Canada
allow.
Doesn't redefine anything. You know, Canada, with multiculturalism, tries to be all things to all people, and Canada defines itself by what it's against,
no,
not what it's for.
That's not true. We
that's
equivocate,
true.
We rationalize.
We don't equivocate. We rationalize because we try to have this be all everything to everybody at all costs at all times. And one of the things we're going to talk about, one of the things that led Bouchard's comments is, and people should remember this problem didn't start, the statocratic state with the Revolution Tranquille, not with the PQ. It started, guess when? 1954. The 54 election between Duplessis and Lapalme, when Duplessis ran it on a Quebec income tax, promising more programs, promising the government's going to make your life wonderful, and promising, guess what, Jim? Transfer payments to the federal government for every dollar they got. They never made them. All they made was a prison of Quebec.
Change. All right, Beryl, last angry man, the other side of news here on the new 940. Thank you very much to Margot Edwards, Melissa Wheeler, and the untiring Chris Bumbray for putting the show to air. And thank you for listening. Stay in touch. Drive safely. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Well, tonight's first half hour, we're going to have two for one. We were going to talk about the question of how we should react as a Quebec society, as a Canadian civil society, to the Islamist challenge. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to get into that with our special guest. And we're going to get into the conference that the Institute for Public Affairs is running and that my special guest tonight will be co-hosting with me next Wednesday at the Delta Hotel. But
Our special guest happens also to be an economist. And he's with the Institute for Applied Economics at the Université de Montréal, the Haute Etude de Commerciale de HEC Montréal. And since this is the day of Monsieur Bouchard's latest rant, I think one feeds naturally into the other. The letter that Germain Belzile organized and that was signed by over 20 Quebec intellectuals last week spoke to the fact of intellectual calcification. Basically, he called for responsibility. He called for self-reliance. In an interview with the National Post, he said very clearly, we have to say the buck stops here. We have to stop apologizing. That was on a political issue. But when you look at the problems of Quebec competitiveness, of Quebec as a society, of what Bouchard was referring to, he didn't say that Quebecers are lazy. We have to come to grips with the fact that part of our problem, part of the problem of how we react to the outside world, how we react on political issues, comes from the fact that we've lived in a statocratic state for almost 50 years. The state tells us what we have to put on little Johnny's head when he rides a bicycle. The state tells us that we have to wear seatbelts. The state tells us when and how we're allowed to talk to our own elected officials and how and when we're supposed to register. The state demands from us information that it has no business having. And many people ascribe this statist approach, which also, of course, includes tremendous subsidies to industries, making everybody, from the smallest citizen to the biggest corporation, basically dependent on the tit of government. But it didn't just start in 76 with the election of the Parti Québécois and their social democratic platform, nor even did it start in 1960 with La Révolution Tranquille and Jean Lesage's Équipe de Tonnerre. It could be argued that it started way back in 1954. It started with money. The 1954 election was between Maurice Duplessis of the Union Nationale and Georges Lapin, who headed the Liberals. The issue was fought on one. The campaign was fought on one issue. Taxes. Duplessis wanted a Quebec income tax. Lapin did not. Duplessis said, with that money, we're going to give Quebecers everything. He also, by the way, promised Ottawa credits for every dollar he collected. Well, those credits never happened. But that state control happened, and that reliance happened. And if we're ever going to get out of our quagmire intellectually and economically, we've got to shake off not 25 years of government, not 40 years of history, but maybe all the way back to 1954. And we're going to get into that and other issues with our special guest, Germain Belzile of HEC Montréal, right after this. Well, as I said in the introduction, we're going 2-for-1 today, and I want to introduce Professor Germain Belzile, who organized that extraordinary letter last week that was written to La Presse by over 20 Quebec intellectuals calling on a firm stand against the rising tide of Islamic thuggery against Western values. But today I think we're going to reverse it, Germain. Why don't we take a look at what did Bouchard mean? Let's not discuss why he did it today. He's got his conference tomorrow at McGill. They sell tickets. It's sold out. It's very nice. But you agree with his basic message? Or are there things he didn't say that he should have said?
Well, I agree with the basic message, I guess. Quebecers do work less than Ontarians. But I think there's a very simple explanation. We're taxed more than Ontarians are. And when you face a very high marginal income tax rate, well, you're not really interested in working overtime.
We are the heaviest tax jurisdiction in North America. I'll use the word jurisdiction.
That's right.
With, I believe, twice as many bureaucrats as the state of California that has five times the population.
I wouldn't know, but it's possible. It's really possible. Our state is very, very heavy. It's top heavy. And whenever you're taxed that way, well, it's going to have effects on the willingness to work. And also, all the réglementation that we face everywhere in the labor market, it creates a higher unemployment rate. And when less Quebecers work, we're poorer.
It's not just a question, though, of the welfare state. It's also the question of self-reliance and Quebecers wanting to do something. You have an idea in another jurisdiction. You stand up and you pursue the idea. It seems that we've almost had two generations in Quebec where okay, Quebec c'est faire, you know, we'll call up this ministry, they'll take care of that problem, and that ministry will take care of my child in daycare, and the third ministry will fund a magazine. And we don't, it's a matter of, not productivity perhaps in an economist sense, but it's a matter of self-reliance, it's a matter of people's energy, of drive, of their energy, their daring. Have we lost our daring? Quebec had a history of daring.
That's right. Quebecers a long time ago discovered North America. They were daring, but now they're used to the government deciding what's going to be done. Look at what's happening with the people who lost their jobs in the wood industry. Everybody is asking for the government to do something. And, well, we're de-responsabilized, and that's very sad, I think.
Now, Quebec's obviously not the only political jurisdiction to have that problem.
That's right.
We've got statocratic engineering everywhere.
Yeah. But in the maritime provinces and in Europe, it's also a big problem.
But is it getting to the point where it's snowballing in Quebec, where governments after government, and we were talking to Paul Daniel Miller last night, the Montreal Economic Institute, where we're in a situation where 43 cents of every dollar now goes to healthcare, another 30 cents to education. The government can't seem to get a grip on any problem, and their solution always seems to be bank a new law, make new bureaucrats, make new controls. It's also every time you turn around, you're facing new government things, and you just want to throw up your hands and say, oh, you know, enough with this.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the same thing with poverty. There's a lot of poverty in Quebec, and the brightest idea of the Parti Québécois was to try to pass a law banning poverty.
How do you pass a law banning poverty?
Well, I think we should try first to ban winter.
Although there was, during the Nixon years, of course, the Moynihan plan to make a guaranteed annual income, which was and it was proposed under a Republican president, but unfortunately died in Congress. But the poverty ban is the idea. Almost, we have ideas that you can say anything you want in Quebec, and just because you said it, it makes it a reality. Except nobody
right.
follows through.
And if you've got good intentions, you're okay, because you want to make the poor better off. So you've got good intentions. So it's okay,
but
there's
no
link between reality and what you're saying or what you're trying to do.
So you end up with a population that's dependent on government to do everything, including think, which is, I think, part of the problem here. And yet this was the political jurisdiction of Louis-Joseph Papineau emancipating minorities 20 years ahead of England. This was the jurisdiction of Louis-Hippolyte Lafontaine and the first responsible government in the British Empire. You know, this was the crépuscule, the crucible that gave birth to Laurier, the preeminent free thinker who said, it has been my pleasure in my lifetime to be condemned by Roman priests to be excommunicated by Roman priests and condemned by Protestant parsons. You know, here, from Marchand to Trudeau to Hébert to Pelletier to Lesage, men of great power and consequence and courage brought down a revanchist government, basically destroyed the power of the church in a matter of 8 years, and suddenly with all this great équipe de tonnerre, the great energy of the 60s and 70s that was unleashed, that energy was translated into kindergarten.
Unfortunately, I think we went from one religion to another.
From the religion of the church to the
religion of the state. And it's very, very unfortunate. And, you know, nowhere on earth, in my opinion at least, have governments created wealth. Wealth is not created by governments. Wealth is created by private initiative, by people having ideas and being able to put them into force.
Montreal, we want to hear from you and everybody listening on the World Wide Web. How frustrated are you with government controls? How fed up are you? Let's hear from some people who actually pulled out of here and said, the hell with the regulations. And we're going to get back to your calls, and we're going to get back to our special guest, Germaine Belzile, right after this. And we're talking about statocratic sclerosis, both economically, intellectually, socially, morally, every other way. And I think at the bottom of what Bouchard had to say today, that is what our problem is. And joining me in studio is our special guest, Germaine Belzile, the Institut Commercial Montreal. Let's go to Daniel on the phone. Daniel, good evening. Daniel? Going once. Daniel?
There we go. Hello.
How are you? Daniel, are you there?
Yeah, good. Thanks for taking my call, Bill.
No problem.
You know what? I do agree. I do agree with Lucien Bouchard, and my statistics may be a little wrong. And
careful, you've got an economist sitting in front of me, so you got a wrong statistic. He's going to catch you, but go ahead.
But we have 6.8 million people in Quebec, and we have 3.3 of them on welfare. And I can tell you...
Well, you don't have 3.3 million on welfare.
Well, that's what I was told. You know,
No.
I could be wrong. But
you're very wrong. The percentage of welfare recipients is around 15%.
Oh, in that case, I'm dead wrong.
However, the case could be made that there is something called state welfare, corporate welfare. Everything is subsidized. When you have a society where everything is subsidized, nobody wants to do anything.
Well, that's
and you look to the government for an extra $24 on your check. You're willing to sell your grandmother and deliver. You're afraid to have an independent thought because what some bureaucrat might think of it, twist it, turn it. You're ready to put up with any kind of slime that the government throws, not just in Quebec, but in Canada. Before Harper, 12 years, you know, the Baudouin affair in Shawinigan, people just shut up. The Gomery Commission, people just shut up about reputations being ruined, about duplicity by government, just to get a check and stay on the corporate or personal dole. And they put up with duplicity after duplicity after duplicity.
You see, what I hear a lot here, and that I don't hear much in any other places, is people complaining about four-day work weeks. You know, everybody wanting a lot of people here wanting a four-day work week. Unions, you know, fighting for a four-day work week. I know my girlfriend works at a shop, and you know, she comes in sick as a dog, and she still has to work while her boss goes on vacation once every 3 or 4 months, goes to the manicure, goes to the hairdresser, goes to the movies, goes to dinner, and always comes in to work late, always. And it doesn't give you much of an incentive to want to come into work. And I think that the people who don't work are usually work less are the people at the top.
Well, that is a hell of a problem, and Germain, that we've had a couple of studies. The state problem is one thing, Germain, but we've had a couple of studies that are showing that the discrepancy in North America between management salaries and the salaries of the average salaries of the guys on the floor are spreading tremendously wide. They're 300 to 400 to 1. Whereas in Europe, they're 30 to 40 to 1, and in Asia, they're 50 to 20 to 1. Should we be worried about those figures, or is that just what Mark Twain said, lies, damn lies, and statistics?
I think that wages are spreading, but I'm not overly worried about that. You know, when you pay a lot of money to the management, and this money is tied to results, well, I think that the shareholders win in that situation. It's a good thing.
But I think what's ticking off a lot of people is that it's often not tied to results anymore.
Yeah.
And we're not even talking about the Enron and the WorldComs. We're just talking about people being parachuted in golden packages to leave, and they almost encourage their own leaving.
Yeah.
Little is tied to results. That's what's ticking off a lot of people about executive compensation.
Normally, the board writes the contracts for the executive officers, but when the people on the board of a company are the executive officers in another company, and the executive officer of the first company is on the board of the second one, there's a problem here.
And there's a lot of the cross directorships like that, and it particularly gets problematic when you've got major industrial board members sitting on the boards of banks and vice versa.
Rub my back and rub yours.
Rub my back and I'll scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. Exactly. Okay, Daniel, thank you very much. We're going to come right back after the news with more on Quebec, Canada, and where the hell our minds are on the new 940 Montreal, 790-0006. And we're talking about what the state has done to us as a people. Whether it's Quebec, whether it's Canada, whether we're talking economically or socially or culturally, the sclerosis that set in, it's not about Quebecers being lazy. It's about the dependency and the fear of government, the dependency on government and the fear of government. Germain Belzile is not only a free thinker economically, and we've talked in the first half hour about self-reliance and where Quebecers have to go, but He's trying to shake Quebecers out of that, the cobwebs of political correctness. He led over 20 intellectuals to sign an open letter that was published in the press last week in defense of Robert Redeker. Robert Redeker is a French philosopher who dared criticize the Quran. Fatwa was issued against him. He's in hiding under police protection. And when he was asked by the National Post where we have to go, what we have to do, Germain Belzile said, we have to say the buck stops here. We have to stop apologizing. We have to stop backtracking like the people who published the Danish cartoons did, like Benedict XVI did. Germain, we can understand economically why certain things are going on in Quebec. But what is it in Quebec, perhaps more than any other jurisdiction in Canada, that makes the intellectual, media, and labor elites so nervous about criticizing what is clearly the same kind of attempt to impose a theocratic tyranny that the same progressive forces fought in the 1950s?
Well, I think that it's not only in Quebec that these things happen. You know, there's clearly in the United States an alliance between the left, the far left, the loony left, yes, and the Islamists also. I'm baffled by it. I'm quite frank about it. I can't understand how people who call themselves feminists should ally themselves with people who treat women as chattel. I can't understand it.
This is what bothers me, though, about what's been happening in Quebec in the past 20 years, and we chatted off-air about this. I've been involved in every progressist cause, from unions to you name it, for 30 years. And what I saw happen here in August, the Hezbollah demonstration, that's what made it different in Quebec. Yes, as you say, we have the loony left siding with the Islamists, but in almost every Western jurisdiction, you didn't have the leaders of civil society that I had around an institute conference table not 2.5 years ago condemning Islamist violence. Now marching?
Parading.
Parading in a demonstration? Fine, they said they didn't know Hezbollah flags would be there, so leave. Mm-hmm. But they specifically excluded in their communiques, Peace for Israel, they specifically excluded any pro-Western organization, pro-Israeli organization. That is what is shocking to me. What is shocking to a lot of people in the world. We had Denis Coderre. We had André Boisclair, the head of a major provincial party. We had Coderre not only there, but affixing the name of the Federal Liberal Party. Henri Massé, the head of the FTQ.
And the head of the Bloc Québécois also.
And the head of the Bloc Québécois. So that's what made it different here. Is it just a knee-jerk anti-Americanism? Is it remnants of latent racism? What is it? Is it fear? Is it pandering just to on the union side, as I said to some union leaders, you know, what are you, looking for cheap union cards and the politicians are looking for cheap votes and they're doing a calculation?
I think it's pandering in large part. And I think also that there's a lot of misunderstanding. They didn't understand what they were doing, really. I think they realized a little later what they were doing. But it's really stupid. It's really, really stupid, and it's dangerous to do that. I was in Lebanon, you know, this
yes,
summer, when the war started, when, in fact, Hezbollah attacked Israel. And the reporting by the media here was really below anything I ever saw. I was in Lebanon. I saw what was happening over there. And I can tell you that when you went out of Shiite territories, people were not very happy about Hezbollah. They were really mad about Hezbollah. These things don't get reported here. And I think that we've got a big problem in Quebec, particularly with the media.
We're going to be right back after this with more with Germain Belzile, and we're going to be talking about more about what doesn't get reported in Quebec. We're going to be joined by Angelo Persichelli of the Hill Times about what doesn't get reported nationally and how the truth is twisted there by various political parties. So stay tuned for more of this, and the lines are lit up. We will get to you. John, George, my God, looks like the Beatles. John, George, thanks for your patience. We'll get to you in a moment. We'll be right back after this. Well, our in-studio guest, and it's been a fascinating discussion so far with Germain Belzile on multiple levels, both reacting to Lucien Bouchard's comment We've been discussing the statocratic, sclerotic attitude of Quebec in economics, in culture, in society, but also in our intellectual courage and in our intellectual freedom. And Germain Bazile had organized a group of over 20 Quebec intellectuals who sent an open letter to La Presse calling on not only European governments, but our own government to do more about drawing a line in the sand against radical Islam. They were had written the letter in support of Robert Redeker, a professor in France, who had, my goodness, the audacity to actually point out some criticisms in the Quran and of the Quran and had a fatwa issued against him. He's in the police hiding. And perhaps if we listen to what Germain Bazile had to say to the National Post, that the buck stops here and we've got to stop apologizing and stop backtracking, that's a message and metaphor for our society on multiple levels. To stop believing the duplicity, to stop relying on the government for everything, to stop listening to stupid rules. Get out there, get mad, break some laws when they don't make sense. Speak your voice. And you know, it's not just in Quebec. You all know my bias in favor of my our next guest, and your manager Belzil will continue to stay in studio with us. My guest and my friend Angelo Persichelli, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And we often talk about, and have talked for a better part of the year, about the major thing wrong with the Federal Liberal Party is that the only thing they seem to know how to do is destroy reputations, do politics by stealth, hide the real criminals, engage in false pieties, smear outsiders. And one of the things that Angela and I have been talking about the past few weeks has been what's been done to Joe Volpe. And the smears on his campaign, while Bob Rae can get away with BC campaign managers putting fraudulent signatures on, Power Corp backing his campaign, the Ignatia flops we've talked about. But boy, Angelo, you have never written such a tough piece that I've seen this week in the Hill Times, and it's called Mission Accomplished. And I'll let you put it in your words. What do the Liberals do to Joe Volpe? And what's Joe Volpe a metaphor for?
Well, I think that if we could characterize what they are doing in terms of legal terms, you know, what they are doing politically, I think it's an assassination. It's a political assassination of an honest person, a person that has worked for the Liberal Party all his life, all his political life. He has done a superb job in supporting all the Liberal leaders. He has worked for them. He has worked for the parliament. He has worked for the government. And what the Liberal Party, with the help of some media, is doing is just unacceptable in a democratic country. A Liberal Party that is trying to put a blame and is trying to do things against one single candidate, saying that there were three elements, that three new subscribers, three new members of the Liberal Party that did not pay for the membership, and they are trying to say that was a kind of a disorganization. And Christ, a judgment just a few hours before the vote started. When they talk about the disorganization and fraud, and after 2 weeks, two full weeks since they had the vote, the so-called super weekend, still the Liberal Party has not been able to give the results because of accusation of fraud, accusations of practices that they are not tolerable anymore in a democratic society. A Liberal Party that has not been able, as I said, to give the results after 2 weeks, preaching and fining and giving a fine of $20,000 to a person. And they said that he was not responsible.
I found that stunning. The parties,
I think that this is unacceptable.
And the way it was done, I remember calling you the afternoon, and I was talking to Jim Duff on air that night. I found it stunning that they issued a $20,000 fine when the party's own lawyer, Doug Mitchell, who had defended Francois Baudouin against the power of the party under Jean Chrétien, recommended $1,000. They said Volpe didn't know. They said this was done by some cultural community leaders in a few cases, yet the party did nothing about Bob Rae's organization with dozens, if not more, of fraudulent signatures in British Columbia. Why is that? Because his brother's John Rae, the right hand to Paul Desmarais, a man who was never called to the Gomery Commission when two director generals of the party said he picked up the phone and called the Banque Nationale and raised more money for the Liberal Party. So they tried to smear everybody with a vowel in their last name and protect the center.
Are we becoming a country of McCarthyism?
Well, I think that there are enough elements.
I'm not sure who's more upset, you or me.
Well, definitely, I believe that there are enough elements to go not to the liberal appeal. I know that Joe Walsh has appealed to the Liberal Party, but it's a joke. And I hope that he will go to the legal system to expose all of this. And I'm sure, well, definitely I hope that he will do so, to expose what is left of the Liberal Party.
You imply that a lot of this happened because a lot of big bets, in quotations, were placed on Frank McKenna, and then when Frank McKenna decided not to run, the big money shifted over, and it's angry big money. It's angry big power. It doesn't know what to do or how to hold control. You think that's behind a lot of it, or is it just...
Oh.
Or is it just straight that, you know, they want their club?
There are many things, Farrell. That is the fact that quite few people, they were looking to get in with Joe Volpe because he is considered, rightly or wrongly, one of the one behind the demise of Jean Chrétien. Maybe. There are many reasons. There are people also saying that he is of Italian origin. I don't think so. I don't believe that the Italian origin has anything to do with that. It has to do with the fact that he's not Francophone nor Anglophone. That's for sure. That is an implication that in the Liberal Party, especially in the Liberal Party, the party that talks about multiculturalism and opening up to the immigrants, but the Liberal Party, I believe, not the traditional, but definitely the Liberal Party at the present time, they are opening up the doors to the immigrants. One condition, that they will be a Romanian immigrant all their life, but not to challenge, not to be part of the system.
Absolutely.
And Joe Volta, he learned all the trades, he learned everything from the Liberal Party, and he has worked that way for many of the other leaders, but he cannot work for himself.
Angelo Persichelli, can you stay with us for a short break, and we'll get to some calls. Montreal will be right back. And we've been talking tonight about duplicity and dependence, a state being so dependent on government that it's not productive. It does. People don't speak their minds. They're scared. And a Liberal Party that's in such tatters and so fearful of protecting the center that it has to do a hatchet job, as it normally does, on somebody. And that scapegoat is Joe Volpe. With me in studio is Germaine Belzile of Institute Commercial Montréal. On the phone is Angelo Persichelli, The Hill Times. And let's take John. You've been very patient. John, welcome.
Hey, Beryl, how are you?
Okay, you?
Pretty good.
I'm not good. I'm angry. What are you so lackadaisical about?
Well, I've been on old so long that my point of view changed about 10 times.
I apologize.
But what I want to say is your first guest. What great freedom of expression and great freedom of business has any business in it?
Sorry, John, you're fading.
Fading?
Yeah. What?
I said, you know, his ideas are revolutionary and very positive, but they have no roots in a socialistic state. When you look at the U.S. and you look at the migration to the Sun State, where there is great incentive on less taxes in business, and you see the prosperity that occurs there, why wouldn't Quebec, you know, do something in that nature? You know, get rid of bills like 101 that prevents heads of large companies.
Well, I think that's what Germaine Belzile would very much agree with you. He wants less state interference, but we all have to get out there and lend our voice. John, we're running up against the clock. Thank you for your views. George? George is gone. Okay.
You know, caller was talking about the difference between freedom in the States and freedom in Quebec. Well, there's a simple explanation. It's a part explanation, but the Quebecers are very less mobile geographically. They don't move that easily to other provinces. Well, you can tax them much more because of that.
They're prisoners.
They don't protest.
They're prisoners in a golden cage.
That's right. And if we could move as Ontarians do to Alberta when we're taxed too much, well, the government would have to take that into account. But we're captive here.
Angelo, if we're captive of a state of a statist thinking in Quebec, how captive is the country going to be? Are they going to buy some more? We've cut him off the line, but I was going to make a point that just as we're captives in Quebec of statist philosophy, we're in danger of being captives once again of typical centralized statocratic thinking nationally. And if we don't move this country, both provincially and federally, and we have so many government levels, we're just going to be in a quagmire forever. I'm reminded of a song by Pete Seeger from the 1960s called Waist Deep in the Big Muddy. And that's what it almost feels like. You're walking in mud. Germaine Belzile, Autitude Commerciale Montréal, thank you very much. I want to tell everybody, next Wednesday, the Delta Hotel, from 1 to 4:30, Germaine will be co-hosting with me a conference called Questions of Values, Ways of Response to the Islamist Challenge. And we're bringing together for the first time anywhere in the world Bridget Gabriel, Wafa Sultan, Nani Darwish, and former Miss World Canada Nazanin Afshinjan. And they will talk about frontline experience of what's going on in the Islamic world. Canada, Montreal, Quebec, wake up. Remember what Bertrand de Jouvenel said. A nation of sheep will always give birth to a government of wolves. Good night. Till tomorrow.